Welcome to Pipeline Meeting, where marketers come to talk about sales. I'm your host, Harris Kenny, and I'll be joined by a guest every Monday and Wednesday for brief 15-minute interviews where we'll share tips that you can apply to support your sales team and help them close more deals. If you don't have time to listen to this whole episode, you can skip ahead in the show notes in your podcast player or find the transcript at introcrm.com/podcast. All the episodes are published there. This episode is a little bit different. We've got the CEO and co-founder of a startup who talks about the early days of building his business. Now, there's the tech side and there's the sales side. What I think that our listeners are going to find especially interesting is all the effort that it took to build this before a marketer could come in, all the effort it took before conventional sales and other go-to-market motions could be used. It's a bootstrap company, a really cool story, and it might be something that you want to try this spring.
I'm CEO, co-founder of an app called GreenPal, and in one sentence, it's like the Uber, but for lawn mowing services. So if you're a homeowner, you need to get your grass cut rather than calling around on Craigslist or something like that. You just download our app, pop your address in, you quickly get back quotes from lawn care services nearby. You hire the one that you want to work with. They come out, take care of the chore for you. And if you like how they did, you just book them for the whole season right on the app. So you find, schedule, and pay them all through the app. Been at this, I guess you could say we're like a 9 or 10 year overnight success. We're now nationwide, United States, like 300,000 or 400,000 people using the app and doing multiple 8 figures a year in revenue. But it started off very humbly. My two co-founders and I almost 10 years ago in Nashville, Tennessee, where we live. And we just started out our first year trying to figure out how to build the Uber for lawn mowing and literally passed out door hangers all over Nashville, Tennessee, trying to beg people to use this app we had built. When you're starting a marketplace like this, particularly a local marketplace that has real world implications, you're moving atoms around. A lot of things can go wrong and you just slowly fix those things with software and try to figure out what the root cause is of all these problems and fix them with the app. On top of that, we kind of taught ourselves how to build software along the way. My two co-founders and I did not know how to write code when we first started. And now we're software developers. It's been a hell of a journey, but one that I'm glad that I did. If I had known how hard it was going to be, I never would have done it. We are now. We got a good marketplace running. It's profitable.
Tell me about those early customers. You said you were knocking on doors. Did you have this idea and like jump right into it? Or was there any experimentation around what you wanted to build in the beginning?
My first business was a landscaping company. I started mowing grass and like when I was a teenager and stuck with this little lawn mowing business all through high school, all through college. Over a 15-year period of time from like age 18 to 33, I had built one of the largest landscaping companies in the state of Tennessee, eventually getting that business over 150 employees, around $10 million a year in revenue. In 2013, that business was acquired by a conglomerate. So after that, I retired. I like took a year off, got really bored, and thought, well, what now? What should I do now? I knew there was a problem. I was kind of solving my own problem in terms of I knew it was difficult for homeowners to get hooked up with good lawn care services. I saw this problem every day running that company. And I thought, well, you know, I don't want to like start another contracting business or another service-based business because that was really hard. I want to start a software business because that'll be so much easier. And boy, I didn't know what I didn't know. It was like naivete as an asset. The only thing we had going for ourselves was it was almost like authenticity as a competitive advantage. I kind of knew the problem. I knew the space very well, but I didn't know how to build software. The idea of like you shouldn't have to call around, leave voicemails, send text messages to try to wrangle somebody to come cut your grass for you. You should just be able to order it like a DoorDash. You know, then it's the same as it is now. It's just that we've spent the decade solving the million things that can go wrong when you order a lawn mowing service. You know, there's literally like 1,000 things that happen. You know, the case of the disappearing lawn guy is very real. And our software, our platform solves those problems for consumers while making it easier for vendors to make more money and with less hassle. So we kind of like add value to both. We have to add value to both sides of the transaction or else it wouldn't work. And we've just been making it better and better and better. Just focus on this one use case, this one chore for a decade.
Which side do you focus on? I mean, I know it's both, right? Because it's a two-sided marketplace. But did you go out and get customers and then tell them, hey, look, I've got 100 people who want their lawns cut who wants to win this business? Or did you go the other way? How did you think about that in the beginning?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, it's that cold start problem that every marketplace goes through. And you have to just kind of hand crank your way through it, which is what we did. And so my previous company did not participate. That was a big commercial-based operation, you know, doing office parks, apartments, hotels, airports, things like that. GreenPal was and still is the easiest way for a homeowner to order a basic lawn mowing service. Those are almost like, they seem like similar industries. They're two completely different industries. They're as related as home cleaning and lawn care. So, and so, I mean, they're really two different businesses. But I did have contacts in terms of like people that were making a living mowing yards, just because I was a little bit of a known commodity. I had like one of the largest companies in the region. And so I was able to call those folks and pitch them on the idea of, hey, you know, try this app that I have built and you know, just see, tell me what you think. About 1 in 10 would get in there and try it with us. And then what I stumbled upon was, well, there's just so much apathy on the supply side right now because our app sucks. I need some glue. I need something to get these guys to stick around. I started offering free coaching and free mentoring to like the first like 100 lawn care services that use the app. Literally every one of them had my cell phone number and I would talk to them 7 days a week on how to grow their lawn mowing business. That gave us like some breathing room to not have to focus on the supply side for just a little bit, to where we could then just focus all of our intensity on the consumer side. And that was just enough to kind of kick off a little flywheel in Nashville, Tennessee, one market. That's how we developed our playbook to then move into other cities. And we spent 3 years just in one city trying to figure it out. And then after that, we moved into our second, third, fourth city. And now we're nationwide in the United States. But those early days of hand cranking it were critical because there's just so much that has to be done. Not only that, you don't even know what to do because you don't have the real world product experience. Like you don't have the real world interactions occurring on your platform. So you don't really know what to build. So It was just one that we kind of eased our way into and almost triaged a lot of it. A lot of those early days is just triage around, okay, what is the single biggest problem on the platform right now? Well, the people hire a lawn care service, but they still don't show up. Well, why aren't they showing up? Let's get down to the user psychology of that. Well, because they're not making enough money. Well, why aren't they making enough money? They quoted it. Well, right. they quoted it too low. Well, why did they quote it too low? Well, because the grass was 2 foot taller than the homeowner said. Okay. All right. Well, how do we solve that problem? You know, like, and that's just one of a million things that go wrong with like a real world interaction between two buyers and sellers that we have solved, you know, little by little over time.
Yeah. I'm so interested to hear how you said you bundled that coaching service.
It really is a video game. You have to work through every level of the game and you have to do whatever it takes to get to the next level. We passed out door hangers all over our city to get 100 consumers to use it. And we knew that we couldn't build a multi-million dollar platform passing out flyers, but it was what we had to do at level one to get 100 people so that we could learn from those 100 people. And a lot of the early days is just learnings. It's just really getting the feedback to understand if you're on the right track because you're inventing something from scratch. You're inventing something that doesn't yet exist. And little by little, you ease off of like completely like high touch experience to a self-serve one. But it's not, well, you can't start self-serve. I mean, very rarely, unless you're just some kind of product savant. I mean, it's hard to do that. You have to hand crank these things. And pretty much every founder story, you know, every big company did that. You know, there's a story of Instacart where that team went to their local grocery store and there was no API to figure out inventory. There was no way. Like they bought one of everything at the grocery store and they took it back to their apartment and photographed it all with a digital camera and put it on their website. So that's what they did to hand crank like inventory and figure out how to develop a SKU based system. So like ask yourself that before you want to go start a marketplace doing anything, would you go to your Kroger and buy one of every single thing there and take it back to your apartment and photograph it and put it on your website? If you're not willing to do that, then don't start a marketplace because it's those types of things you have to do to hand crank it to get the flywheel going.
What was the first thing that changed for you as you felt like that was shifting underneath you within the business, that all of that grit was starting to pay off and all of a sudden you realize, hey, I'm sort of sitting on not an ATM machine, but I'm sitting on something that's standing on its own, generating this cash flow. When did that happen? And then what did you do? What did it feel like?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You know, self-funding and bootstrapping a business can be a lot like chess. It's a slow build. No one move wins the game. It's just strategic. It's one that you're building on your momentum, and you're building on your previous decision making. Whereas like starting a venture backed startup is more like poker, where you're making these calculated bets. They're winner take all in many cases. It's high stakes, high cost of failure if you're wrong, and so it's the difference between chess and poker, really, from my viewpoint. And so for me, you know, the first 4 years were very much like an exercise of managing personal psychology, where it was just like, well, you know, I mean, we the business literally made like 50 grand last year, like all in, like this is not a business, but I can see where it's going. If it doubles and then doubles again and then doubles again and then doubles again, we'll have something. And, you know, we did double last year. And so it's very much an exercise in the management of one's personal psychology. That was just all there was to it. And, you know, like I was going to get out of bed every morning and I was going to go down to the office and I was going to work my ass off on my best idea. And fortunately, I'm not terribly creative, because that was my best idea, still is. I don't have any better ideas. And so this is it. You know, we're going to grind on this thing and see how far we can take it. And so that got me through the first 3 or 4 years. And then maybe like year 3 or 4, you start to make a little bit of money. And then as the founder, you realize your role is less of like chief blog post writer and chief code writer and chief like PR specialists, you know, all the things you're doing in the business. And then you shift into one of a capital allocator. And then you understand that, okay, yeah, we made 10 grand last month and I get to figure out how to spend that 10 grand to make more money. And so, okay, well, where, and then again, go back to triage. Well, where do we really need the most blocking and tackling? We taught ourselves how to write code, but we suck. We need a professional CTO. And you start looking, well, these guys make $250 an hour. That's really what we need. Then you hire that person, and then it's like almost like a superpower. And you're like, wow, this is incredible. Look how much faster we're moving. This is great. And you start making more money. And then, okay, well, now what do I need? Well, I'm doing SEO and I'm pretty good at it, but I need somebody that's like focused just on that. We need to hire a professional SEO person. And so you're starting to make this money and you're putting money back to work. Once you see the power of delegation and you see the power of build a great product, make customers happy, stick around, make some money, make the product better, get more customers. Once you see that flywheel start to move, however slow, you can then start to see, okay, now I get where this is going. And then success is an inevitability. And that happened for me maybe year 4. So the first like 2 or 3 years were very much an exercise in faith, managing my team too, not just me, my two co-founders, you know, managing a personal psychology. And if had we raised capital, one or two things would have happened. We would have gone through that process in 6 months rather than 4 years, or we would have gone out of business. So, and the likelihood of going out of business was probably 3 to 1, maybe even more. And so, you know, capital can accelerate things in a positive direction or a negative one.
Let me know, where can people find you? Are you active on LinkedIn, on Twitter?
Yeah, well, first, if anybody doesn't want to mow your own yard, just go to greenpal.com or GreenPal in the App Store or Play Store and get the chore done and a push of a button. Anybody wants to hit me up, Instagram's the best place to reach me. Brian M. Clayton, drop me a follow and a DM there. I'll hit you back.
That's all for now. You can find show notes at introcrm.com/podcast. The theme music for Pipeline Meeting is by Neighborhood Vandal. If you learned something, consider sharing this show with a friend. Thanks for listening.